There is a list of references which will be put online, and you will be able to consult it. And I will refer in the lectures to particular entries in this list without sort of elaborating on precise reference, but you can always find it here. So we will start today by talking about duality in general. So our goal is to develop holographic tools, the tools of gauge gravity or gauge string duality, AdS-FT correspondence. And before actually developing those tools, I would like to say a few words about the origins of duality in general. And if you want, this is a philosophical program of how to reformulate a particular theory that is originally formulated in a certain language, in language of certain degrees of freedom. In a different language, it would be easier to handle. And sort of the background philosophy of that is quite interesting, but it boils down to basically the change of variables, the convenient change of variables in the partition function for your quantum theory. So it's not fundamentally different from what you're doing when you have to compute some complicated integral. And of course, you know that the value of the integral does not depend on what kind of variable, integration variable you use. It could be integral over x from 0 to infinity of some complicated function. But if you're able to find the appropriate transformation that would simplify this integrand and now reformulate it, the integrand in terms of some variable y, which is related to variable x, maybe some complicated way. But in new variable y, your integral becomes trivial or very simple. You can take it. The result, of course, does not depend on which variables you would be using to take the integral. So this sounds maybe perhaps too simple, but I think this is something in the heart of what we are trying to do. Of course, sometimes you're not able, so in quantum field theory and especially in this gauge string duality, the big open question is how to formulate this change of variables precisely, how to be able to relate the original variables to the new ones. And that is a rather non-trivial question, but it is a non-trivial question not only in gauge string duality, but also in some simpler settings. And I would like you to be aware, so we will not go into depth of this Lattice statistical physics and other topics, but I think it's important for you to be aware that these matters were discussed long before AdS-FT correspondence emerged. And there are many open questions there still remaining. And I will give you various references as we go along. So so we'll talk about duality. And let's start with a very simple example from quantum mechanics that you had seen many times. And so the references for this part will include, so let me, I will just put the names of appropriate references and the full information is in this list, so you'll be easily able to identify everything else. So the references for this part of our discussion will be Rajaraman, so there's a wonderful book that all of you should know on solitons and instantons in quantum field theory. And then there is a review by Savit on Lattice statistical duality. Again, full references in the list that you'll be able to access online. And then there are very good lecture notes by Jeff Harvey from 1996. So in particular, this example is from Harvey's lecture notes. So consider a wonderful Hamiltonian e squared over 2m plus m omega squared x squared over 2. In the quantum language, of course, in quantum language, we have commutator of p and x being equal to minus I h bar, and h bar will be set to 1 from now on. So this Hamiltonian is self-dual. Under the following transformation, under the following transformation, let's call it transformation D. And transformation D simply takes X to, let's call it a capital X, which is P over M omega. And little p goes into capital P, which is minus M omega small x. So note that page 2. So note this is a canonical transformation. Canonical transformation with the commutators p and x equal to commutator of p and x, little p and x, equal to minus I, h bar is set to 1. And also we have d squared, if you do this transformation twice, this is nothing but the parity transformation p. Namely, little x goes to minus little x, and little p goes to minus little p. So the ground state wave function and its Fourier transform Fourier transform are mapped into one another by the action of D. By the action of D. So this is this is the example that you, I'm sure you have seen in quantum mechanics. Sometimes usually it goes by the name of you solve your harmonic oscillator in coordinate representation, and you solve it in momentum representation, and the wave function you can see in both representations is a Gaussian. So the moral of the story is that the Fourier transform, so this is the crucial observation. So Fourier transform of a Gaussian is a Gaussian. And in this sense, so this simple Hamiltonian is self-dual under this transformation. Right, so we can solve this quantum mechanical problem in terms of p variables, and we can solve it in terms of x variables, and we know how to map one set of variables into the other set of variables, explicitly shown here. So this may be a little bit trivial, but note, I mean, this last sentence is important because it mentions Fourier transform. And that's an example of of something that will appear in this duality language time and again. So consider example number two, which usually goes in the literature by the name of Cramer's one-year duality. And various generalizations thereof, but the original results go back to 1941. So consider an Ising model in two dimensions. So Ising was German, so that's why he's Ising, not Ising. Some important remark, because names are distorted time and again. So he was born Ising, and let him remain Ising. So consider this model in d equals two on a square lattice. Square lattice with nearest neighbor. Interactions. And this is the simplest example. Of course, you probably know from statistical physics that this, of course, can be relaxed. I mean, the lattice can be not necessarily squared. It could be rather complicated, triangular, honeycomb, or there's a variety of models, which some of them can be solved with some sophisticated technique. But this is not, for our purposes, this is all irrelevant. This is just an example. Showing how this duality was originally formulated, and we have nearest neighbor interactions. So the picture is the following. So and yeah, there are also boundary conditions, of course, that one has to mention. But again, so this will not concern us too much. So that's the situation. So on sides, right? So we have these sides labeled by I, for example, right? So this is side I, and we have the spins up and down sitting on these. The sides, and they can take, for example, values plus minus one. And the partition function of this model, Z as a functional of J, is written as the sum of all spin configurations. And each spin can take the values of plus minus one of the exponential of. It is a coupling constant, which also includes, so this coupling is combines everything, like the coupling divided by kT at a finite temperature. So I combine it all in one letter J. Sum over all nearest neighbors, let me call it I, sum over ij of these spins Si and Sj. So this is a Hamiltonian. Now, J can be positive or negative, depending on whether or not you have ferromagnetic or anti-ferromagnetic model. And one can see that the system has, so the system has a global Z2 symmetry. Namely, you can change all Si to minus Si, and your partition function does not change. So one can do various things to, well, first of all, you probably know very well that this model is in two dimensions is exactly solvable. And that has been achieved by Anzager, then many other people after him, different methods of solving this problem. So that's a separate big topic. Before this solution was found, Cramers and Vanier discussed various ways of reformulating, of expressing this partition function in different ways to facilitate the high temperature and low temperature expansion. And in particular, you can rewrite Z. So Z can be simply, well, you can rewrite it in the following way. So there is a sum over S, again, which takes all configurations of S to take values of plus minus one, And now, so there is an exponent, right? I mean, all here is classical, so we can rewrite this as a product, right? So this is the sum of all nearest neighbors in our lattice. And as I mentioned, you have to take care of boundary conditions because this lattice can be, of course, you should tell what is happening if this is a finite volume, maybe large volume, but finite, right? You should tell what is happening on the boundary. Or you can have the periodic boundary conditions in which you have this lattice simply on the surface of a torus. So you kind of, this side is eventually identified on that side and this side on that side after some big circle. So the boundary conditions will not affect what we're going to discuss now, but in principle you should be aware, of course, that in principle you can impose various boundary conditions. You can with some twist, for example, on these boundaries and so on. So it's a separate issue. So the important thing is the following. So you rewrite this exponent as a product. So what you do, right? So you have a sum of all this nearest neighbor interaction, right? The exponent of a big sum is the product of individual exponents, right? For individual I and j, and then each exponent, so each individual exponent, can of course be rewritten with the help of the Euler formula as a sine, as cosine, and plus I sine, right? But we don't have I here, so it will be quotient sinh. What I'm going to do. So so it will be written like this. So k from 0 to 1, so there's a sum of 0 to, slightly sophisticated thing. And then there is si and sj to power k. Where C naught, so these coefficients, C naught is cosh of J, and C1 is sinh of J. Right, so reflect a little bit on what has happened. I mean, it's maybe take a minute, I mean, depending on how fast you are. Right? So the exponent is written as cosine of something which contains I, plus I sine of something which contains I, cosine of I. The argument, right, is cosh. Moreover, this argument of cosh will contain si as j, and cosh is an even function, and si, each si and each sj can be only plus minus one. So if you expand this cosh, for example, you have only positive powers of this si and sj, and therefore, no matter what, you will always get one. For any configuration si or sj, this cosh will be cosh j times one, always, because we always have even powers of si and sj, right? That explains why we have si sj to power zero, for k equals zero, with the coefficient c naught equal to cosh j. Then there will be a sinh, and the sinh is expanded in odd powers, and therefore you will have this si and sj to odd powers, and the sum of odd powers, and this is always si times sj times the even power, which is always one, times si sj. Therefore, si sj to power 1 times sinh of j is the second piece in the expansion of this exponent using the Euler formula. So this can be, you can manipulate this sj further. And in this review by Savit that I mentioned before, and full reference is available from this list, there is a very detailed discussion of how you manipulate with this partition function further, which I strongly recommend you to read. For us, the important thing is the following, that what we are doing here is we are changing from our si and sj variables to some other variables for each link. And this variable is now k. So we have new set So we have new set of variables for each link, for each nearest neighbor link k. So for each nearest neighbor link. So the word link here is a crucial thing. So the picture is the following. So suppose this is a site labeled I, and the links, of course, they have a certain you can have for each site, you can have links going vertically and horizontally. And so you can say that these k's, they first of all they are labeled with the location of a site I, but they are also labeled with direction. So where k1, for example, k1, comma I is the link in the horizontal direction, and k2, comma I is the link in the vertical direction. So now the partition function, again, I refer you to Savit's review, how precisely to manipulate this further. But the result of this manipulation is the following, that the partition function can be rewritten in the following way. So original Z of some constant which will depend on J, and then there will be a different partition function, a different J, where J star is related with the old J by the following equation. And you can continue this and be more specific. This is 1/2 cosh J sinh J to power n, and this is the number of sites in your lattice. And then there is a sum over some dual variables which also take values plus or minus one. The exponent J star, sum over nearest neighbor interactions of Si star Sj star. So what happened here is the following. We started doing this, right? This manipulation takes some time, which again I refer you to Savit, how to precisely do it. We started to, instead of using the original S variables, we started using different variables, which are now living on links, not on sites of this lattice. And it turned out that you can then introduce the so-called dual lattice. The centers of the dual lattice will be in the centers of the squares and the dual lattice will be also a square lattice shifted by half of the lattice size with respect to the original one. And the meaning of a dual lattice is that so these links can, so they take these values as we discussed before, right, in that sum, but you can represent the sum as the original in the original form, but now summing over S stars, and S stars will be variables which take values of plus minus one, but now living on the sides of the dual lattice, not to the sides of the original lattice. And this is the same original partition function. So I have done a certain change of variables as was convenient to me. And it turns out that my original partition function can be related again to the ISMIC model on a square lattice. But now the square lattice is shifted with respect to the original one. It's called a dual lattice. So it produces a dual lattice. And you have dual variables. And in principle, you can write down explicitly the relationship between SIs and SI stars. And this is done in Savit. Now, why this is interesting? So this is interesting because the relationship, so you can look at this relationship between J star and J. And this can also be written in the following form. It's sinh of 2J sinh of 2J star is equal to 1. And from this relationship, it's obvious that you have the following dependence of your new coupling constant J star, because remember that originally and in the dual formulation, J and J star play the role of the coupling of your Hamiltonian normalized by temperature. So the relationship between J star and J is quite interesting. Namely, it is essentially reciprocal in the sense that if you have J, which is extremely large, and of course, if J is extremely large, then typically it's very difficult to do perturbative calculations in your theory, right? Because normally in ISINT model, if you want to do a perturbative expansion, of course, you expand this thing, right? You take into account small J expansion, or you can reformulate it, right? And that's why this whole duality came about, because people try to reformulate this partition function so that it would be possible to do the so-called high temperature or low temperature expansion, right? And this is a euphemism for a strong coupling expansion or weak coupling expansion, namely whether your J is large or small, right? So they wanted to reformulate this in such a way that you would effectively expand in 1 over J, not in J, right? And that's the result of this reformulation. So, but they got much more than they originally wanted, I suppose. Because now you can exactly, so this relationship is exact. And therefore, if you want to get, if you know some perturbative results at weak coupling, for example, for weak J somewhere here, it means that for a dual lattice, you also know the result in large J and vice versa. Right? So this is a weak, strong duality. In terms of coupling, this is one of the examples of duality, which is very useful because usually, if you don't know, remember last time we discussed what happens in these heavy ion collisions that there is strong coupling, and we knew that we can apply, for example, we can extrapolate our perturbative results for thermodynamic quantities such as pressure, entropy, equation of state, and so on. We can extrapolate from essential ideal gas of free of quarks and gluons down to the intermediate coupling, and the error, as the lattice QCD tells us, will be something of the order of 20%, which is it's a big error, but it's not order of magnitude. It's not 500 or something like that. But you cannot do the same thing if you talk about transport and non-equilibrium properties, because these coefficients, they happen to depend on the coupling very strongly, and therefore you need to understand the non-perturbative physics. So if you happen to have some relationship that would allow you to reformulate your original integral, the partition function, in different variables, but these different variables are amenable to perturbative expansion now, and this is a weak, strong duality, then you know the non-perturbative results for your original partition function. So that's the main philosophical idea. You will see, in principle, other examples of duality. Quite often, you discuss something which is called weak-weak duality, in which you have a relationship between a coupling constant, which maps weakly coupled regime of a theory to weakly coupled regime of a dual theory. And that also has some applications, but I would say that this is probably the most useful one from a point of view of approach to non-perturbative physics.
Usually when duality of the ASIC model is presented, people say that it's self-dual. So that instead of considering this Hamiltonian, you have the Hamiltonian plus the external field. And after the duality transformation, you see basically that the two coupling constants are switched.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. So in this case, you're saying that you're mapping, let's say, like low temperature into high temperature? Because in the other case, you can see it right away because the Hamiltonian is the same. But in here, yeah. What worries me is this coefficient that depends on J, right?
Yes, I mean, you have two coupling constants, right? But they are not related
by one over
no. It's more complicated, but it's still weak, strong, right? It's still...
Okay, so the idea is, let's say that J star is it's a weak coupling, then I can expand this set star in powers of J, and that will give me results of set J.
Yeah.
But it's not saying that I'm mapping one system into the other. It's just another way of writing it.
No, you effectively, right, up to this prefactor, this is Ising model on a square lattice, right?
Okay.
So you it is self-dual in a sense, and because you map you have a map of your integral, right, of your physical quantity from which everything follows, like from that you can calculate thermodynamics and everything else. Right, you map it into that. You not map. I mean, maybe it's better to say that you rewrite this in the form using the dual change of variables. Right, so it's no different from what you are doing when you have integral from zero to infinity of, I don't know, some modified Bessel functions divided by some horrible expression, right, over dx, and you found some change of variables in this integral that somehow trivializes this integral. But the value of the integral remains the same, no matter what you do with the integrand. That's the same. That's the same type of philosophy. Okay. Now, it's interesting to note so this model has a phase transition at J equal to J critical, and if this is unique, so if transition is unique, then it must be that J critical is the same as J critical star, right? I mean, no matter from which side you start, you change either J star or you change J, and if it's only one phase transition, then they must happen at the same point, regardless of from which side you started. So this means IE that Sinh, looking at this expression, so the Sinh of 2J critical is equal to 1. And the solution of this is J critical equal to minus 1 half log square root of 2 minus 1. And this is approximately 0.4407. That was confirmed, I mean, that was found by Kramers and Vanier before Anzeiger, so confirmed, so this is confirmed by the exact solution in 1944. Okay. Now, exact solution. So this was a very brief example of a self-dual Ising model, but it's just the tip of the iceberg of this lattice statistical physics duality. In fact, it's a very interesting thing. So let me just note that. In other dimensions, models may not be self-dual. Self self-dual. So for example, in D equals three, the partition function of the Ising model at coupling J is mapped not into the Ising model, but so up to this prefactor, which depends on J, there is a dual partition function of the gauge theory, still on the lattice, but it's not now. So we're not talking about variables which take values of plus minus one, but we talk about vectors. So so this is Z2 gauge theory. Gauge theory in three dimensions. And in general, what kind of variables we can have. So the spins that take value of plus minus one, we already encountered. Then on each side, you can have a gauge field sitting there, so labeled by the side number I, but has also vector index mu. In principle, you can have something more complicated. Namely, on each side, you can have a field labeled by a number of indices, mu, nu, lambda, rho, and so on. And that if you have P, so if P is the number of directional indices, indices, namely mu or mu nu, and so on. Right, so SI has no indices, so it's a, in a way it's a scalar. I mean, it has only numerical values, but you can put the vector there which has a certain direction, or you can put any tensor with various indices. So if the number of such directional indices is equal to P, so then there is a general theory of this duality which tells you that the P star, the number of directional indices of a dual model, is equal to D, which is the dimension of our lattice, minus P minus two. And in particular, this means that models with P equal to P star and equal to D minus 2 over 2 are self-dual. The others are not. So for example, Ising in D equals 2 has P equal to P star equal to zero, right? So we map our variables without any directional index to variables S star, which also takes values of plus minus one, has no directional index. So you can, obviously, so this is a statement without any proof or even attempt to explain where this thing is coming from. But again, our purpose is to illustrate various duality examples. And I refer you to this review by Savit and many other references, which explain in detail how to get this result and also how to do this duality transformation in general. So several remarks. So remark. So this is duality in lattice StatMech models. With abelian symmetry group. with abelian symmetry groups, such as R or S1, Z, Zn, and so on. So the example of this is this gauge group Z2, but all of them are abelian. And the statement is that this duality can be understood as Fourier analysis. On abelian groups. Crucial property which allows this interpretation is that the characters of an abelian group form an abelian group. Okay, so then you could say that. So again, so I will not. So this is the subject of a fairly long course itself, and I will not develop this in any detail. And again, this review by Savit is a very good reference. But the point is that this duality, this type of duality in lattice models of abelian groups, can be formulated as a well-defined mathematical theory. So this is homology on the lattice, and one important and crucial property is that in this situation when your group is abelian, you can actually explicitly express your new variables through the old ones. So there are transformations. And again, so this is homology theory, so there are some transformations that allow you to express, for example, S stars through the old variables SIs, through your old SIs. This is not always possible in duality. In particular, as I mentioned already, in ADS-CFT, nobody knows how to. So in ADS-CFT, you have a situation in which you take your degrees of freedom in your gauge theory, for example, n equals 4 superrank males. You have some gluons floating around, maybe some scalars and fermions. These are fields in your original formulation. You go to strong coupling and You effectively, what you do, you have a partition function. You do a change of variables in your partition function, but it turns out, and you get your partition function expressed in different variables, just like here, except that those different variables are rather complicated degrees of freedom that you haven't actually expected, at least naively. You wouldn't see in your gluons and scalar fields of n equals 4. You couldn't possibly see the emergence of gravitons of higher dimensional space and other fields and form fields and so on. And yet they do appear. So this is a non-trivial thing. So this situation is much, much better understood because this is a complete mathematical theory. It has been formulated over the years, I think somewhere maybe in the 60s and 70s, that has been complete as a mathematical theory. Of course, what you would really want to do, right? I mean, this is not an accident that people were trying to revive this long after Anzager and Kramer-Swanier. Of course, you remember that in the beginning of 1970s, there was this lattice formulation of QCD, and a lot of hope was kind of put into generalizing this into the non-abelian case, because if you were able to do the same thing with lattice QCD, you would solve the theory effectively, right? Just like here, maybe you don't have exact solution, but if you have a duality, that means that all things like the confinement phase transition and many other things would be easy to compute, just like it's easy to compute in this. So, what happens with non-abelian non-abelian groups. Well, unfortunately, this property that allowed, so people try to understand the same for non-abelian groups doing the Fourier transform on these groups, but this crucial property that the characters of the abelian group happens to be the abelian group, so you sit in the same realm when you're doing this Fourier transform, you don't go out of this set, is lost for non-abelian case because the characters of non-abelian groups not only sometimes they don't form a group, right? So this property is lost completely, and that is a source of difficulty. However, let me just mention some words for people who are sufficiently motivated. I can say maybe more privately. So there is something which is known as the Tanaka-Crane duality. And so this leads to the Hopf algebras and non-commutative geometry. And various other things. So again, see this review by Savit and also the book by Polyakov, Alexander Polyakov, which is in this references. All right. So I will end this. His remarks on the lattice duality by saying that this generalization has not, to my knowledge, has not been achieved. Although you can look at recent papers in the archive. I mean, from time to time, you discover somebody looking into that and claiming that there is a generalization of this Kramers-Vanier for non-abelian groups. I think last time I think kind of papers. Maybe 2 years old or something like that. So in principle, yeah, I don't know what the current status is, but for curious minds, that perhaps is something to explore. Now, let me mention another example. And this will be closer to field theory. So example number 3. Also very well known in the literature. It's a duality between so-called Sine-Gordon model and the Fehring model. So two-dimensional situation again, but now we have the field theory, the Sine-Gordon model, this interesting action of 1/2 give me phi plus the potential. It looks a bit unorthodox, sine minus 1. Okay, so you can look at this model and describe excitations of this model. And the excitations in this model, they fall into two classes. There are perturbative excitations. Let's call them mesons. The masses square root of alpha, there's a coupling constant alpha. But then there are also solitonic excitations, solitons, with the masses at R and if you, so details of this, so see this book by Rajaraman for details of how to get the Celitonic solutions. And well, Mesonic solutions, I think you can get without, well, you have enough knowledge of field theory, so you just quantize this model perturbatively, and you get this, you get these excitations. And solitons are a little bit more complicated, but not much. You find the classical, you write down the equations of motion, you find the non-trivial solutions to the equations of motion, non-trivial meaning that they describe configuration which is not simply a perturbative solution of vacuum phi equals zero, more complicated. The coupling constant in question is beta squared. So we note that for beta squared, so for beta squared much less than one, you have masses of solitons are much larger than masses of mesons, right? So expand this cosine. And so that's something that happens in this simple two-dimensional model, right? So you have these two types of these excitations, the perturbative ones and then non-perturbative ones, and then the different masses. The other model of interest is the Tyrant model. And the Tyrant model has the following action, d to x. Now we have fermions, mu psi plus m psi bar psi, and they are coupled with this characteristic interaction for fermion interaction, so psi bar gamma mu psi, psi bar gamma mu psi. And one can show, and again, so that's not something that we'll do on board, this is just an illustration, that in fact the sine Gordon model, this is our SG, the sine Gordon model actually is equivalent to Tyrant model. And the procedure that establishes the exact map between the variables, so again, so you can say that, okay, so what does it mean equivalent? So this quantum partition function of one model, namely this one, is equal to quantum partition function of the other model, although the integration variables in two cases are very, very different. And they're very different, especially because these guys are bosons and these are fermions, although in two dimensions, that is perhaps not terribly surprising. So the procedure that allows to establish this correspondence is called bosonization. And I refer you to Rajaraman for details, so you should know what this is and how it works. For us, the only relevant comment is that such a map exists, and it is something that maps the coupling constant b squared into the essentially inverse up to these factors of pi and so on, inverse coupling constant of the Tyrant model that comes from the exact map. So then we have the following correspondence between the two. So we have sine Gordon and Tyrant, and the mesons of our, so we have elementary excitations in this model, perturbative ones, that's mesons, and then we have also the solitons. And you can look, because we have explicit map between the two, so you can actually look at where the excitations on one side are mapped into the other side. So the solitons will be mapped into fundamental fermions whereas mesons will be mapped into the fermion antifermion bound state. So again, so this is a Wickstrom duality, and Wickstrom duality some exchanges kind of the degrees of freedom in some in a certain way that the non-trivial solitonic-like solutions are mapped into the elementary excitations, the perturbative excitations, and whereas the trivial solutions, the elementary excitations, are mapped into something non-trivial. So again, keep in mind all this the case of QCD, right? Because this whole story was, you know, it's a sketch of a long and dramatic story of how people try to understand QCD, because of course at weak coupling at high energy you can formulate your theory in terms of quarks and gluons of these elementary excitations, but of course we know that in real world and lower energy our actual physical degrees of freedom are hadrons and the bound states of quarks and gluons, and you can see how so. The dream would be to make a transformation in your path integral or your partition function that would map one set of degrees of freedom into the other set. Into the other set. All right. So finally, well, this clock is wrong, right? So the lessons. But finally formulate the lessons. So the lessons are the following. The duality can relate weak and strong coupling. Then the duality interchanges fundamental quanta with solitonic object or solitons in general, and some abuse of word soliton perhaps. And one thing that I didn't mention, but again, you can read it, for example, in this lecture notes by Harvey, that I strongly recommend. You can also ask what happens to conservation laws under the duality. And typically what happens, duality interchanges the neutral charges, right? So you have your action. Of course, you can analyze the symmetries of this action. You write down the neutral currents, neutral charges relevant for the symmetries. Then you do the duality transformation and you ask a question, all right, so what happens then? What are the relevant conserved charges on the dual in the dual language? And typically what happens, often what happens is that the duality interchanges the neutral charges with the topological charges, topological charges, solitons, and so on. And the third lesson is that the duality involves geometrical concepts such as Fourier transform and groups. Transform, and in general, harmonic analysis. Now, a couple of final remarks. Bring some space. So, So this can be considered for, so we briefly mentioned one simple example for two-dimensional situations, right? And although I said that for lattice, of course, you can go to higher dimensions as well. For abelian groups, that's not a problem. But in field theory, the situation is much more difficult. But in principle, these dualities can be considered, in higher dimensions, d equal 4, q of t's. That's very non-trivial, the gauge groups. Gauge groups and actually goes by the name of Mountain and Olive duality. Especially for QFTs with additional symmetry, such as, for example, supersymmetry. And this lesson that we sort of learned here is that this interchanges the electric and magnetic degrees of freedom, and elementary excitations are interchanged with monopoles, and these are solitonic-like objects, right? So that is in line with these lessons. So again, so this list is long, right? So Seiberg-Witten duality in n equals 2 Superang-Mills and so on. So these are separate pieces that we will not consider in detail. So this is just for your general in string theory. Generalizations to string theory, and let me mention the word Hitchin. So it's a separate story about the monopoles and duality involving these degrees of freedom, and up to more modern applications that you can find online in the archive. And there are some keywords like Englund's program and so on. So this is it's a very long story, but what I want you, so the purpose of today's lecture is just to convey the fact that people were thinking about duality for a long time for obvious reasons, because it allows to relate weak coupling and strong coupling, therefore go beyond the standard perturbative technique that is used in quantum field theory for decades. It has its limitations, has its triumphs, but it does have limitations. And there are open questions in all these items. So for people who are interested in that, I mean, you don't have to work exclusively on ADS CFT. There are plenty of open questions there. So let me finish with the statement that our goal is far more modest . And this is what we are going to do starting from tomorrow. So we don't want to solve the full thing. It would be nice, but what we want to ask is, can we formulate a duality for theories involving gravitational degrees of freedom? And so ADS CFT correspondence or gauge string duality is an example of realization of this goal. And we will see, starting from tomorrow, how this works in detail. But again, so let me just emphasize again that we are not talking about anything but the change of variables in the path integral. Okay? The change of variables will involve gravitational degrees of freedom. It is unexpected. But perhaps, so because keep in mind that gauge string duality is a conjecture, right? It has not been proven yet. So for the unambitious mind, this is a food for thought, right? So perhaps we are overlooking something. People are working on this. People are trying to find gravity. And I can tell you privately, if you're interested in the research papers on that, people are trying to find the gravitational degrees of freedom in the path integral for gauge theories to see how gravity emerges from gauge theories and so on. And then that would be the steps in the direction of proving the ADS CFT correspondence. But as of now, it remains a conjecture. And it certainly, so this needs to be understood better. Perhaps we are overlooking some fundamental principles of what exactly this duality means and how to have the map between the old degrees of freedom and new degrees of freedom, perhaps with the help of some new mathematical tools. But I don't know. All right, so we'll continue building this thing tomorrow.